Welcome to My Life as a Landlord, where we educate curious U.S. and Canadian landlords, answer rental questions, and clear up confusions about all things housing. If you're looking for some landlord education, interesting guests, and awkward conversations, you've come to the right show. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury. This is My Life as a Landlord. Welcome to it. Well, hello there. Thanks for joining me. I am Dr. Jen. I am so excited for you to join me today and continue your education in landlording world. And in the world of landlording, you never know who you're going to run into. On a Zoom call not too long ago with other real estate investors, I met one of the most dynamic folks I have seen as in this industry in a long time. Welcome, Lee Nugent.
Thank you, Jen. I appreciate that.
Yeah, let me brag on you a little bit here. So you started as an employee, then you acquired some rentals. You were a newbie landlord, self-managing properties, got up to 45 doors, turned over to property management. Now you are real estate investment and coaching and lending, fund manager, and author. Where does it stop? Oh my goodness.
Probably stops with world domination. I love it, right? So, and thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Well, walk us through your very first deal, going from employee to landlord, that whole transition that lots of folks are in. Walk us through it.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and set the scene for you. It's 2015, and my wife and I, after a few months of researching about real estate investing, and there's a whole background story to that, but let's just go ahead and keep it on task. We decided that we were going to move into the rental space. We were going to go to the bank and see if they would approve us for a loan. So for some reason, they fell for it. You know, I don't know if they just liked it, but over the years, my wife had helped me get my credit score up, because when we first started dating back in 2009, it was a 450-ish credit score. So all that to say, we get approved by the bank. The bank approves us for $150,000. And they explain to us that out of that 150, we can buy five $30,000 houses. We can buy two 75s, but it just up to 150. So we go out there and we start looking. And the first deal, this is where it runs together, because my wife says one property was our first one. And then I say another property was our first, because we bought two duplexes within a couple of weeks of each other. And the first one, let's just go ahead and say this one's more sexy. So we'll say that's the one that my wife found. It was a duplex where the landlord or the owner was just tired and he was beat up. He was asking $93,000 for it. We ended up picking up for $67,000. It appraised for $104,000. And we were able to go in there and actually get a small check back at closing, because there was so much equity in the deal. And this was before, right before the credit unions changed some of their lending rules. So we were able to get that without any money out of pocket, which is great, because we only had about $6,000 to start with.
So I can just imagine that you guys were scared, nervous, all of the above.
in a way, right? So this is where my wife and I differ. I grew up broke. I mean, my family was poor, and it was, thankfully, my parents worked extremely hard their whole lives to provide what they could for us. But they didn't instill financial literacy into us, right? My wife's mom was a banker, so really put that discipline in her at an early age. So for me, I came from nothing. So what's the risk? You know, I'm taking the shot. For my wife, obviously, it was a different story. She was she was definitely nervous, and still at times she can be, but she's gotten a lot more desensitized as it grows. And I think she's got the confidence that I've kind of figured out a little bit about, you know, how to make this successful.
Well, what do you think is the biggest thing that stops first-time real estate investors? Because they haven't been desensitized. How do you break through that part?
I think that a lot of people, they just haven't had that catalyst. There's a time when something snaps for people, right? And it could be that horrible day at work. You know, we're only one bad day away from changing our life for the better or for the worse. So we have to keep that in mind. And for me, I realized I was a horrible employee, you know, and it was eventually, okay. This was after I had a couple properties and, you know, at that point, I realized I really like not having to go and work 8 hours a day for my money. So I was like, I'm just going to buy more of this. But I would say most people, they stop before they even get started. That analysis paralysis, all the what ifs, and they just don't feel empowered enough, right? So that's where I try to put out free content to help people get over that, or at least take away the excuses, you know, because everybody's got an excuse. And to them, or to ourselves, they're valid, right? No matter how outlandish they might be to other people, they're valid to these people. So as I coach some of the people that I work with through those things, it really is getting down to what is it that is your catalyst? What's going to change it for you? And is somebody speaking power into your life, or are you buying into other people's fear? You know, so I think that's what stops most people.
Say that again. Will you say that again?
I don't even remember what I said. It's just off the top.
Are you finding your power or buying into other people's
fear? Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's where I feel like so many people, they underestimate the power of the words that they have around people. You know, so if you're constantly telling somebody you're never going to be anything, you're never going to be anything when you grow up, don't be surprised if that person listens to you, right? And just like you can go over here and you can compliment somebody about a positive attribute, and that's going to change the entire way that they see themselves, because now they see what others see in them, right? So I feel like that's one thing that a lot of people are missing.
That's amazing. I've had other real estate investors ask me, what does it feel like to do a deal, like the first deal? And I know there's a lot of listeners out there that are landlords, so they've done a deal, whether they've inherited the property or they've bought it like yourself, or they're part of a syndication maybe for an apartment building or something. And I equate it to this. If anybody has ever sung karaoke, if you've ever been forced to sing karaoke where you pick the song, it doesn't matter if you're good, bad, whatever, get up there and sing it like you own it. And that's what it feels like. It's you're raw and vulnerable. And sometimes that scares people. I will tell people that's what it feels like. And it doesn't matter the dollar amount, right? It doesn't matter if you're buying a $30,000 home or a $3 million apartment building. It doesn't matter at that point. It still feels the same.
I would actually agree. You know, in the South, we've got a saying, nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs, right? So that's where we probably were getting started. And I think that even now, I've become somewhat desensitized, like I said earlier. So I guess I'm kind of seeking that next nervousness, which is where I'm growing into our business now. And that's because acquiring single family, small multifamilies, at this point, it's literally just like another day in the office. When a deal crosses the desk, you could put me up to, you know, to EKG or whatever. You wouldn't even see the jump, right? Because it's like, all right, here's the numbers. There's the offer. Let's get it done. You know, but I know, and I can recall back to that first deal. Oh, I was looking at the numbers and I was looking at them again. And then I'd go and I'd stand up and I'd go get a drink of water. And then I'd come back and I'd look. And then, you know, I'm second guessing myself the whole way through. So I can completely identify with where they're at with it, you know, and it's now I guess I'm just chasing new nervousness
That's your next quest, chasing new nervousness. I really like that. Well, let's dial it back for a second, because I know we've gone down the real estate investment rabbit hole, but you and I also talked about landlording and certain skill sets about landlording, and some people shouldn't be landlords, right? In your experience, your expertise, how can you know who shouldn't be a landlord?
And it's somewhat subjective, right? But you can always, at least from my experience, I realized one of two things. I was either going to get tough or I was going to get broke, you know, because when we started out, again, I was raised from a poor background. So I identified probably all too well with my tenant base. It was C-class properties. So whenever a tenant would call me and say, hey, look, my money's a little funny this week, can I pay you next week? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. No, I get it. It's fine. And about 3 months later, I'm sitting here like, you know, I'm just not a priority, you know, to them. Right. So We're sitting here and we're nervous about making the mortgage payments and everything because, like I said, the bank lent us the money, but that didn't mean that it was a good decision on their part. Thankfully, now, it was. But all that to say, I had to get tough really quick, or we were going to wash out of the business as fast as we got into it. And then you see these people that they come in and they're just wide-eyed and excited and they're ready, and you can sense that. You're like, you're happy for it, and you almost want to protect them to a point. It's like, please keep that energy. Stay excited for this. Because I went from being Mr. Nice Guy to completely militant. If it was the 5th of the month, I didn't care what excuses you had. Here's your eviction notice. You can pay for the late fees, you can pay for the eviction filing, and you can stay. Otherwise, we're gone. And then I had to find that way to back to middle, to where it was like, all right, let's be reasonable, but also let's not be a doormat. And unfortunately, there's so many people that they become the doormats, and they don't develop that sense of desperation or that spine to where they're like, you know what? It's okay to not be liked in this business. I've accepted that. And my tenants, I would hope that they could tell you that, yeah, I'm not going to play with you. You can call me up before the first if you know that you're going to be late, and we can work something out because you're communicating with me, and that's all that I ever ask. But if you tell me on the 5th that you're going to be late, I already know you're late because it's the 5th and it was due on the 1st. So now we're talking about you not communicating with me. That's a different conversation. And over the years, making sure that I share the expectations with the tenants, but I also enforce them is key. I give everybody grace, but whenever you have something coming up every single month that's a deal or that's an issue, then maybe we're just not going to do business again, and that's okay.
And
But
and
what
it's a
I'm, yeah,
business relationship. Yeah.
it really is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and I like how you say there's a balance between completely enabling folks to be the doormat and then and enabling people to constantly pay late, which, the other extreme is becoming militant. There is a human factor in all of this. And I like how you had told me that you almost niced yourself out of the business based
Yeah.
on what you had said. There's only so many times that you can let people pay late before the mortgage and the bills become
Yeah.
late as well. So I think that's a very unique skill set. So if people are not able to enforce it, dare I say, you're okay with encountering. I don't want to say
Yeah.
confrontation because that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good landlord skill set is that you have to be okay with encountering, not being combative or anything, not
Yeah.
militant.
Yeah, I'm not trying to go over there and fight you, but I'm
That's
also
right.
comfortable having an uncomfortable conversation.
That's right. That's right. Well, and awkward conversations is really
Yeah.
where it's at. You've got to be okay with awkward conversations as a landlord. But let's go to the next thing. When you originally contacted me in that Zoom call, Lee, it was wonderful that you we're going to talk about your book here in a second.
Oh, yeah.
But the other thing that you had written in your initial contact to me was, oh, and by the way, I had a murder at one of my properties.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
All right. So this was in 2022, actually. It was November 2022. My wife and I, we're actually leaving. We moved from Louisiana. If you can't, for the listeners, if you can't tell that I'm from Louisiana with the accent, I'm from Louisiana. We moved to Florida back in 2022. And in November of 22, we were going to Nassau in the Bahamas for our anniversary trip. And as we're going over to Miami, I get a call from my assistant, and they just kind of tell us, hey, look, there's news over here on this street. There's cops all up and down the street. There was a murder at one of the properties. And I'm just like, man, you could have told me that later. I mean, I hate to hear it, but thanks for the storm cloud over the trip. And we start talking about it, and apparently it's a fiveplex that I had purchased. And two of the tenants were inherited. They were brothers, and never heard from them, never had any issues whatsoever. One day, apparently, one brother's at work, the other one's there, had somebody over, and I never even got the details because I'm also the kind of person to where if it doesn't pertain to me and if it doesn't impact my business or how I operate, I don't need to know it. So I didn't need to know the particulars, but long story short, what I gather is it was a drug deal gone bad and somebody got shot 5 times in the chest.
Oh my.
And did not make it. So they it took a day or so to clear the crime scene so that we could go in there and secure the property and do everything with that. But it definitely, we've had some crazy things happen, right? We've had, you know, tenants to where they had an ex that broke into the house. I'm talking like broke the window, went in there, committed assault. And I would think these are C-class properties, not things that happen like that very often. But we've had some crazy things over the years. Murder by far is probably the most intense. So I'll give you that.
No kidding.
Yeah. But it was interesting to deal with that. And it was a challenge because now you have all these questions. Did it stigmatize the property? Do I have to disclose this? What, you know, what's all this look like, right? So long story short, the brother that didn't, was not involved with that, asked us if they could stay in the property. So we had to come down and make a business decision to say, all right, well, he wasn't involved with the crime. It was this, that, and the other. So we spoke to him and said, look, you can stay with the property. The other tenants, they had no complaints with him. So he stayed for like another 6-7 months, you know, before we ended his lease for non-payment and let him go.
Good on ya. Well, you know, when it comes down to the business decision, I think that's a very important perspective for landlording, is that it's a business decision and there is a human aspect to that business decision. Also comes down to numbers, but in the human aspect, I know several landlords, including myself, who have some tenant nicknames, and I have a couple of tenant nicknames. For example, when a tenant, I'll just tell you, when a tenant is, lets us know that they're pregnant, if they're in a one bedroom with a shower, we instantly say, okay, so first thing they're going to be looking for a two bedroom with a bathtub. So in, you know, on or about that time, we need to make sure that if we have something available that they can shift into. The other thing that we know that from history, they're going to become very angry and usually they take it out on us. So beware of angry pregnant lady. That okay. is the nickname for our angry folks. And the thing is, once they have the baby, it's usually wonderful. Unfortunately, the irritability comes out on us. But
no.
I understand that you've got a tenant nickname. Tell us about Old Drunk Patty.
Oh, yeah. All right. So a lot of our tenants have nicknames. Old Drunk Patty, she was just one of the earlier ones that we dealt with. So to give you the context, we bought the two duplexes, the one that my wife found, the one that I found, and then we found a six unit. And we purchased that. And this six unit property, it was a fourplex in the front and duplex in the back, all on the same lot. We had it filled up. Everything was good. The tenants were going well. And then we have this tenant, Patty. She comes, she fills the last unit, and everything is going well for a couple months. But then it starts to change. We start getting calls from tenants that she comes out in the evening time because they're all out in the courtyard. And it's almost like a little family unit that they had there. So they had some really good cohesion between themselves. But Patty would come out and she would talk about being a former Olympic skier, and she would be just blitzed out of her mind, drunk, or God knows what else. And then she would start to irritate and agitate the other tenants. So she would start talking and trying to aggravate them to the point to where now they're like, hey, look, just leave us alone. Then she wouldn't. So then they would go and call the police. The police would come and she would run back into her unit. She wouldn't answer the door. And the police are like, look, we're not going to kick down the door. We're not going to drag a drunk out of their apartment. So, you know, if she comes back out, call us, we'll come back. And that went on for a better part of a month, month and a half. And at one point, one of my tenants who actually kind of going back to working with the tenants and developing a relationship, they actually used me as a realtor to buy a home whenever they, you know, got their stuff, because we also work with our tenants. If they tell us they want to become homeowners, we work to put them through free credit repair and everything else. But all that to say, we get contacted by the tenant and they're like, look, we're going to end our lease if we can't, you know, get rid of her if she doesn't stop us. So I was like, all right, so I now have a choice. I let Old Drunk Patty come over here and ruin the other five units and those tenants, or I get rid of her. So I get letters from the tenants that all state all the BS that she's been pulling. And then I go and I, you know, give the corrective action letter, which means that, hey, look, we're receiving complaints. If you can't allow other tenants to have quiet enjoyment, we will have you evicted. So it all cooled down for about 2 weeks. And then here she comes again. So she starts it back. And then we file the eviction. Long story short, here comes eviction day. And, you know, there's drunk Patty. Most times tenants don't show up to evictions, right? Because they already know, it's like, look, this is over with. I'm done for. Well, I show up and I'm sitting there and I'm just, I think it's our first eviction. And I'm just like, we got this. No, we didn't. Judge threw us out on our asses. And the reason why that, just for your listeners, and this isn't legal or tax advice, by the way, but the thing is, they told us that even though the tenants wrote the letters, they didn't give a sworn statement and they weren't there to testify. So they had to disregard all of those things. And then they said, your eviction's denied. So we got tossed back out. Well, at this point, Patty continued to be drunk, starting her stuff, but she also stopped paying her rent. So immediately, as soon as I got out of court, I went down there and I refiled the eviction for non-payment. 2 weeks later, we're back in front of the judge. The eviction gets granted and we send her packing. But yeah, old drunk Patty was, she was a fun one, you know?
Oh my goodness.
Oh, she was doing some other things too. Like, I don't even know if I told you that. You'd send vendors over there and like other vendors are like, we don't want to come back. And what it was is some things like she would be quite lewd with them, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to get them to, you know, stick around for a little bit of a drink and, you know, talk Netflix and chill, I think some people, you know, might refer to it as. So she was a problem, you know, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was fun.
Well, let's talk about what you've done now. I mean, I'm just amazed. You started as an employee and then you have leveled up so many times. Now here you are, you're helping people, you're a lender, you're a fund manager, you're an author. You said it before that you're chasing the next, what is it that you're chasing? Nervousness?
Yeah, that next nervousness, right? So what is it that's going to move the needle? What is it that, you know, that I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I could. I'm going to challenge myself to do it. So the next nervousness is actually launching this fund that I'm on.
So tell us all about the stuff that you offer now. Like, you have absolutely grown up and you've actually graduated from landlording because now you have hired a property management company with the experience that you've got. So I'm just saying that you're not just blindly turning things over, but so what are all the things that you offer to folks?
All right. So I'll just kind of run down. Primarily, I turned over the property management to give me the bandwidth to really commit into this fund. So for a few years now, I've been using our line of credit and I teach people how we went from 6,000 to establish a line and we leveraged that up and how it really grew. But back in 2020, 2021, you know, the real estate prices kind of went up, but our ability to make those offers stayed the same because the numbers, you know, still had to make sense, right? So our deal flow got interrupted. But a large part of that was the realization that just because our deal flow slowed down doesn't mean that other people aren't doing deals. So I started looking at what can I do? Can I use my line of credit? Can I loan it to these people so they can continue their projects? And can I still make a solid return? So it was all just arbitrage, really. So like, for example, even today, somebody comes to me for a loan. I'm paying my bank 8.5% whenever I draw it down, but yet I'm lending it 12, 13, 14% plus a couple points. So I'm just having the, you know, the cream off the top, so to speak. And as that really started to scale, the demand grew and it outpaced my ability to lend. So then over the years, I've met some amazing people with liquid capital that they want to put it to work. So I would send them the loans. Well, and then it grew even more last year. So I'm like, all right, there's definitely something to this. So I looked in, researched forming a fund to where I can just really pull the money together, lend it at scale, get a profit. And that's kind of the project right now. But I still do coaching, business consulting on a small selective basis. I do a couple seminars a year. And that's just more so to help people feel comfortable. Like I said, I want to take away those excuses. You know, I know some people, they're going to sit there and say, well, Jen, I can't invest. I didn't buy this $50,000 program. You don't need to. Trust me. The way that I started was YouTube and Google, and it worked out all right so far. So don't let that do anything. So I love to do these seminars to just strip away all the excuses that you might have. You say you don't know how to analyze the deal? Great. Here's a YouTube video that I recorded a couple of years ago. The methods are the same. You don't know how to wholesale? Here's the basic premise of it. You know, just those things, right? So I'm removing the paywall with regard to you tell me that you don't have enough information to get started. So I enjoy that because, again, coming from where we came from to where we're at, I love to see other people succeed. So I want them to be able to have that power to change their family's future too. Where was I? All right. So the private money lending, the fund, the coaching. Yeah, that's, I'm still a realtor in Louisiana and in Florida. I own a brokerage back in Louisiana. So it's, there's a lot of, you know, things out there. I have a small acquisitions team back in Louisiana for wholesaling deals that I don't keep myself. It's all really leverage, to be honest with you, is learning to, you know, to put that leverage out there and help other people make great money while you make great money for yourself too. You know, it's, there's my favorite quote, if I can ramble a little bit longer,
sure,
is by a philosopher, Archimedes. And it says, give me a long enough lever and a place to stand and I can move them. And man, I think it's still on my LinkedIn profile somewhere, but I've had that up there for years. And it's just, it's so true that, you know, leverage time, leverage the bank, leverage people, and, you know, have that mindset that, hey, there's enough out there for everybody. I'm just going to get my piece of the pie. Everybody else is welcome to the table, you know? So that's kind of just my approach to where we go.
Amazing. Amazing. And when I learned that you had a book, the funny thing is that I had already had your book and read your book before you contacted me. And then I ordered your book again and I went, wait a minute, I already read this. This is cool. So tell us about your book, which is another way that you're helping people.
Yes. So one thing that I don't have just an over amount of is time. I'm sure you can kind of surmise that, right? So I have to protect my schedule, which means that, you know, I don't go to lunches or take just random phone calls and, you know, tell people what ARV is. And for the listeners, ARV is after repair value. Okay. Little freebie for you. But that being said, I have to separate away from the tire kickers and from the people that aren't willing to invest in themselves yet. So by doing that, I still want to have the access of information out. I wrote this book and it talks about wholesaling. It talks about flipping. It talks about analyzing rentals, leveraging your contacts, building out everything and starting just like what we did. And I even put it on my website and it's free to download. You don't even have to buy it if you don't want to. Just go there and get the PDF. But it's really, again, just that whole, here's the glossary, here's the terms, here's the basics. You know, by the time you read this, my goal is for you to have enough information to go out there and take some kind of action. Whether it be go knock on a door and say, are you willing to sell your house? Great. And then secure the contract and wholesale. Whatever that is, go take some kind of action. So that's why I wrote the book.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Now, I'm sure some of my listeners are going to want to reach out to you. How would they do that? They want to talk to you. They want to get a hold of you. They want to see your website. Give us your contact info.
So the best way to contact me is through social media, DMs. I try to stay on top of that, try to stay responsive. A lot of the times, random phone calls don't work for me. I have to stay highly scheduled. So I do ask that if you do text, if you're watching this video and you see the number there, don't just call, just text and say, hey, look, I'm so-and-so, I heard you from this, I'd like to connect. I'll be happy to set a time to connect. Connect with me on social media. So on Ari with Lee, it has my Facebook, even my TikTok. If you like to see like stupid real estate related memes, follow my TikTok. It's fine. And then Instagram, things like that. So it's all pretty much there at rewithlee.com.
rewithlee.com. And for those of you who are listening, either on one of the audio platforms and are not watching it, the YouTube channel at My Life as a Landlord, the text number for Lee is 239-359-9189. And he's got an amazing background of all kinds of things behind him with RE with Lee also. So that's a way you can get a hold of it. Now, in all of my podcasts, Lee, we always have a call to action. Always have a call to action. And we've talked quite a bit about your book. And so the name of your book is Real Estate Investing Primer. Real Estate Investing Primer. Now, I will tell my Canadian landlord listeners that are out there, it does have some US only terms like a 1031 exchange. That's a deferment of capital gains. That's not applicable in Canada. However, about 98% of the terms in Lee's book, Real Estate Investing Primer, is appropriate to real estate investing no matter where you are. If you're interested, your call to action today is you can go to Lee's website, RE with Lee, and get the free PDF version of the book. Or you can order, if you're in the US, you can order a paperback or Kindle version on Amazon.com. Or Canadian listeners, if you want a Kindle version on Amazon.ca, you can get a Kindle version, or you can go to Lee's website and get the free PDF version. Lee, anything else that we didn't cover? Oh my goodness.
Not really. Oh, I will tell you. So if you sign up on my website for the PDF, it will put you on my mailing list that we're working on doing right now, which is going to be basically, you know, updating you with market updates. Some of the different things I'm promoting, again, the hard money lending company that I've launched, which is Atlas Investment Capital. So as we collect the funds for that, start putting that on the street, I'll be emailing investors, also announcing seminars, videos, get-togethers whenever we do those things. So that's really it. And I appreciate you having me on here. I enjoy talking real estate and exchanging some of the battles, you know, that we've all been.
Love it. Well, all you listeners out there, let me know your comments and questions by emailing me learn@mylifeasalandlord.com. You know that your comments and questions create the next podcast's resources. And if you know of a really great guest like Lee that I should have on the show, there's a podcast guest application on the website as well. I'm always looking for dynamic guests to bring interesting education resources to you. And don't forget the blackout bingo cards that are free on my website, mylifeasalandlord.com. Thanks again so much, Lee, for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Jen.
Awesome. Hey, join me next week, all you listeners, for episode 63, Canada's Mortgage Industry and Housing Outlook for 2024-2025 with guest from Greater Vancouver, Christine Sweeter. Sweeter, eh? You like my Canadian accent, eh? I will see you there. Thanks for joining us this week. For all the show notes and resources, check out mylifeasalandlord.com. Want to invest further in your landlord education? We've got a toolbox for you, wherever you are in your journey. Make sure you follow the podcast on the platform you're listening on. Thank you again for joining me, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury, in this episode of My Life as a Landlord. I'll see you next time.